podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good morning, good evening, no matter what the time is, where you are currently situated. Steve Wellings here for a post-fight pod. It's a bit odd doing it at 12 o'clock in the morning, but here we are. Nonetheless, Ryan Deal's on the call, so is Danny Young as well. I'll put the link in the chat shortly if you want to talk about the destruction that we have just watched. Naoya Inoue with a 10th round stoppage win over a very brave challenger. I say challenger. He was a unified champion himself, wasn't he, Marlon Topalez? Not that you would have known it by the end of the fight. Inoue getting the job done. Ryan Deal's there over in New Zealand. Who knows what time it is there. Ryan, what did you make of Inoue's performance? Were you suitably impressed by what you've just witnessed?
I think Inoue was okay. That's not the best we've seen of Inoue, but he did what he needed to do to get the win. And yeah, I mean, we've seen better from Inoue, haven't we, really? Like, Topalez didn't offer too much, but Inoue got the job done. I feel like he could have worked the left hand a bit better and, like, dug that again, left hook into the body a bit more, and I think he would have got the job done 5 or 6 rounds as opposed to 10, but you can't really argue with it's a unification win inside the round, so you can't really argue with that, I don't think.
What about Topalez's performance? I thought beforehand that he would open up a little bit more than he did early on and get himself knocked out. I don't think he was negative by any stretch of the imagination. He stood in range a little bit too long at times. I think the right hand was working, especially the right hook, the jab as well. They were imploring him in his corner. Sean Gibbons was screaming out, hit him to the body. He doesn't like it to the body. He did his best, I think, within his technical limitations. We know what he is. He stood forward and he did a pretty decent job. Topalez, Inoue, took his foot off the gas at times, as naturally is going to happen, and then in the end landed the right hand. But what about Topalez's performance, Ryan? Did he surprise you? Did he overperform? Did he underperform? Where does the Filipino sit for you?
I think Topalez surprised me in the fact that if you look at him in the Akhmadaliyev fight, he sat on the back foot and he put the shoulder up as if to invite Akhmadaliyev in and then throw. And that's never going to work against Inoue because Inoue is so quick and so explosive that that's not going to work. So immediately he came out and he put the shoulder above that front knee and he initiated Inoue's movement and he made Inoue move and throw, which is what he needed to do really to offset Inoue, but he couldn't put the shots behind that, if that makes sense. He couldn't time the left hand and he couldn't time the right hook, and that's ultimately what put him in range and just let Inoue gradually get that range and just unload onto the body and the head and put those right hooks. And yeah, Topalez did okay, but at the start of the fight I didn't really see what he could do to win, and that just became obvious as the rounds went on, and that's just the way the fight went. I mean, I would like to have seen Akhmadaliyev get the win and fight him, because I think Akhmadaliyev offers a little bit more in terms of technical ability, but Topalez did what he could, and it's Inoue at the end of the day. This is a pound-for-pound great that we're watching, well, for me in the evening, for you guys in the afternoon, and we just got to enjoy it, really, because it's spectacular to watch.
Mm-hmm. Spectacular to watch. Just enjoy it. It's a pound-for-pound star, as Ryan says there. The link is in the stream. The stream is in the link, something like that. The link is in the chat, rather, I should say. If you want to jump on, you can. Dez has jumped on. We'll go to him very shortly. Danny Young is here as well. MB has slid in. The sad bastards are in the chat on Boxing Day. Flip me, you've got to feel sorry for them, haven't you? He's just unified two divisions, says MB, and look how easy it looked for him. The only challenges I see for him are two weights above. He did mention in the post-fight interview that super bantamweight is his division for now. He's going to become a force at that weight. Whether that proves to be the case, we shall see. He talked about a fight in May as well, which the negotiations are going on. John Trounson says, Inoue constantly proves that speed and power is less important than timing and accuracy. Danny Young, you're very welcome on this Boxing Day. Thanks for jumping on. The commentary team, I thought they did okay. Nice, you know, it's not easy being there on Boxing Day. They did their best, Jamel Herring and the other fella whose name escapes me. I think they did buy into the narrative a little bit. The storyline to Parles was maybe doing a bit better than we expected, a bit better than they expected. Whether he was winning any rounds, the seventh aside, I think you could arguably maybe give it to him, is questionable. Do you think they got drawn into the storyline, dragged in at times?
Yeah, very much so, Steve. I just wanted to say happy Boxing Day on Boxing. Happy Boxing on Boxing Day, should I say. It's been a real treat. But yeah, I think the commentary team are kind of leading us or trying to kind of give us a false sense that this is actually a fight of two fighters, like, you know, that it was that Topalas was actually kind of contributing something to this. I didn't think so. I just think Inoue took a more measured approach, bearing in mind that, you know, there was a lot on the line, and obviously he was probably slightly worried about Topalas. But I think from the first knockdown right the way through to the end of the fight, I think there was only one clear winner, one person that was going to win this. I think the commentary team kind of were just paying a bit too much attention to what Topalas was doing, maybe should have just focused on the actual good punches, you know, like John just made a great point there, you know, the timing and accuracy of Inoue's punches, rather than having to rather than diving in at times, and that he was just so measured. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, this is one of the greatest fighters, I think. I genuinely think that, you know, just how he goes about his business is just, it's almost unrivaled, Steve, to be fair.
Of an era or of all time?
All time, I think, personally. I just love the way he goes about his business. Like, there's no bullshit from him. And, he does his work. He's very technical. You know, his defense is great. He can take a shot. We've seen that in a couple of fights now. He can take a good shot. He's got power that not many fighters at that weight division can carry. I just think he's so dangerous, and that's what I like about him. You know, you put in you maybe like again, maybe I'm going off on a bit of a rant here, but if you put in your way, maybe even 30 years, you know, before his time, we'll be talking, you know, you'd say he was an all-time great, wouldn't you?
So I don't think that's out of order, Danny, because we can look at the fighters of the past with sort of rose-tinted glasses and all, but I think it's his ability, his technical ability, his speed, his timing, his defence, his punch power, that whole package, that's going to transcend weight classes, really, the way he puts the shots together. And I know he's a little bit leaky at times with the defence, but you're never going to get a human being in there who's going to be so superb. They're not going to have some kind of even mild deficiencies. But if you put the whole package together at the moment, you can't see past him, really.
No, even brings, like, you know, the fact that he's transcended it down to the casuals nowadays. Like, you know, I've got friends of mine that would, you know, would only ever watch, you know, the AJ's fights, you know what I mean? Those kind of fights. And then, like, I've got people texting me today going, oh, what time's the ring walk and that? You know, this, he's doing something right. You know, he's capturing people's, you know, interest and things like that. So he's doing something right. And I just, yeah, I just think he's there, you know, he's certainly pound for pound for me now. I know there could be an argument over, you know, Terence Crawford, so on and so forth. I just think the way this guy's gone about his business is just, it's just extra special. And I think he deserves all the praise he's going to get over the coming years, months, whatever he gets. So yeah, fair play to him.
Well said, Danny. Praise to you as well for coming on here. There's going to be a unification between me and Mrs. Wellington after this, but we had to get on as best as I could as quickly as I make it there. Jimmy Yappy says some serious dedication from the panel this Christmas. Smash the like button, lads, he says as well. Take Ames says, Merry Christmas to you all and a Happy New Year. Same to you as well, Ames. Thank you very much for that festive message. Michael Thompson says, heading off to a family lunch soon. But just a quick Merry Christmas to all and bloody hell, what a fighter Inoue is. Hashtag levels. Talking about levels, Des, welcome to the call. You're very welcome there indeed. Is Inoue held to higher standards than other fighters? I mean, you do see it sometimes whenever he hasn't blasted them out after four or five rounds, they're saying, oh, he's maybe tiring, he's maybe even struggling. But, you know, no one's going to be smashing up this high level of opposition for 12 rounds. He is in a unification after all. He got the job done in the end. Do we hold him to higher standards? Are people too quick to sort of roll their eyes if he hasn't got the job done quick time?
I think that's a sign of a great fighter. When you have someone that's so good, flawless, and they make it look easy, we hold them to a much higher standard. Do you remember when Floyd got caught a couple of times by a Mosley? Yeah. Everybody put Mosley level with him. And Madonna gave him a tricky night, but come nowhere near beating him. We always said that Madonna gave Floyd a really hard fight. But in actual fact, what he'd done, he'd just done a few things differently. But Floyd still won. And Andre Ward was the same. And I've seen it in the amateurs when you get a really standout kid. Anyone that can win a round or win a section of a round, we elevate that success and we magnify it. I think to kind of draw back on something you asked, Danny, I think we're looking at a generational great. He reminds me so much of Duran, but Duran did it at lightweight. And the reason I always come back to Roberto Duran, Duran had a 10-year Hall of Fame career that was just like Inoue before he fought Sugar Ray Leonard. And then he had a second half of his career, and that was a Hall of Fame career as well. I think Inoue is the closest, he's the best small man of my lifetime. And he looks to be like the most dominant force at a weight since Roberto Duran.
That's high praise indeed, Des, and I'll raise you as well. You mentioned some of the other guys. Roy Jones was like that at the time. Do you remember people were just looking for little figments they could hold against him that he could possibly be beaten? And for a while, they pointed at the first Montel Griffin fight as well. We were just trying to find anything we could to find it, to make them humanised almost. Roy Jones is another one I'd throw in there.
That's a great shout. And the way you said it, I don't know what you used, the phrase you used there, and it was perfect because if anyone landed on Roy, if anyone had a good minute against Roy, we magnified it and we elevated that other person. So, yeah, Inoue is definitely in that group. But what's interesting about Inoue is, yes, he's travelling through the weights, but he just seems to be getting better and he seems to be getting more and more polished. And the second Donaire result, I know Donaire had a bit more miles on the clock and he was an ageing fighter, but the way Inoue made a few adjustments, the way he dealt with Donaire in the second fight shows us what great fighters do. They really take they take their failures in the first fight and they iron them out. And the second fight they put it right. Andre Ward did it against Kovalev. Great fighters always look better the second time round. Inoue is definitely a great fighter. I thought Fulton would give him an awful lot of questions to answer. But he sorted Fulton right out. And I thought, I never see today's fight, but I thought this would be a difficult one for him. But he's, by the sounds of it, he's gone through this one guy, just like he did Fulton. Inoue, we're looking at something very special in Inoue.
Inoue is indeed a special fighter. Nathan Newman has thrown in a comment off the back of Des's commentary there. He says, Floyd Castillo as well. Another example of someone putting it right in the rematch, even though, of course, Floyd won the first fight. In the eyes of the judges, if nothing else, Matt Butter says, if Inoue is staying at Super Bantam, I'd like to see him in with Neri or Sam Goodman. I think it will be Neri next. Rob Kelly is on the call. Welcome to you, Rob, on this Boxing Day. Boxing, indeed, over in Japan. You mentioned Fulton there. He takes control of the first
the
four rounds.
In the house as well, they
have plenty of boxing going on. He takes control of those first three or four rounds, doesn't he? He pushes you on the back foot. He shows you his power, his speed. It's the ring mastery, if anything else. He pushes fighters back and says, I'm the boss here. I'm in control. You're going to have to come through me to have success.
And that's one of the fucking scariest things about him, because you can talk about his power, you can talk about the speed and the hand speed and the dig and the technique and everything, but it's where he puts you with his feet. it's like, it's almost like he's a fucking stalker or a predator or a shark or a fucking whatever kind of fucking wild animal analogy you want to use that's stalking their prey. It's like he's moving you into position all the time with his feet, controlling the distance. And then when he's whipping those shots over with such fucking power and precision, the technique of the shots for me each time I watch him is fucking, it's just outstanding. It's like Dez says, you're watching a great, like, you know, he might not be a household name. He might not fucking be recognizable if he walks down the side of the street here on this side of the world, but he's underappreciated in terms of an athlete and a boxer. Like, he's a fucking genuine star of the sport. And if there's any justice, there's going to be some kind of opponent along his way. And this might not happen. Like, we've seen, you know, the boys have referenced Floyd, Ward, fucking Roy there. Roy's problem was he didn't have a peer. The closest he had to a peer was fucking James Toney, and he boxed his ears off, and there was nobody else around to give him a fight. Like,
Mitch Ochevsky was mentioned, but he wasn't the name, was he? He wasn't the American character we needed.
No, and he was never going to go overseas after the fucking Olympics and all that. Jones, like, that fight, I think, was floated in Eastern Europe somewhere, wasn't it? So I don't think fucking Jones was going to travel. But anyway, I think we'll travel eventually. I think the clamor will come for him to have a big, massive Vegas showdown. Who the fuck does he fight? I don't know. Is there anyone there to give him a fight? I don't know. Like, Topalis was game. He could punch. He could take a shot. And ultimately, it goes the same way, even though he was having spells and mixing it up in the middle rounds. I think it's just the fucking technique of Inoue. He throws the punches so perfectly. He turns his hand over at the last second, at the very last split second, and it just maximizes the impact. And you can hear the fucking impact of the shots off the cameras and that. He's a scary dude. That's probably why they call him a monster, in fairness. But I'd like to see him, you know, he's like all great fighters. You'd like to see him come through a bit of adversity, but I think he just might be too good and could maybe go up another weight and fucking dominate there. Who knows? Like, but yeah, it's like, it's pound for pound number one between him and Crawford for me. And I'm happy to watch him each time he's on. I'd watch him every day of the week. Like, I think his talent level is fucking scary. Like I said, he seems to have a good beard too, because Topalis was popping him with some stuff and going to the body on him, and nothing seems to faze him. Like, he doesn't seem to be ever, he's like a robot. Like, he doesn't seem to be fucking off put by anything coming back at him. So, you know, like, everything, boxers slow down at one stage. Nobody thought fucking Golovkin. Everyone, like, oh, Golovkin was fucking unbeatable and that. Like, things change and time waits for no man. But this guy seems in good nick and doesn't even seem to look like he's going to drop too many rounds. Like, even against Fulton. Fulton, like, a lot of people were 50-50 on whether Fulton could fucking do something with him.
Myself included, yeah.
Correct, myself included, yeah.
Yeah, and he did what he wanted with him. He did what he wanted with him and made him quit. And he does that more often than not, so. And you know what I like about him as well? Active. Relatively active for a world champion fighter these days. So let's see what's next for him. I'm excited anyway. That was a good fucking end to the year. Like, really, really good knockout as well. So yeah, all credit, all praise due to the monster.
All praise due to the monster. Dez, we mentioned as well. Well, I think it was yourself who mentioned it. I even cut it as a short about the weight. Only the weight can beat you. Do you still stand by that after today's performance? It's only going to be moving up in weight. John Trounson there saying certain sections of fans will now keep demanding he goes up another division until he gets beat by someone twice his size. We see this all the time, don't we? It's almost we need to find something to cling on to. Like, well, let's see if he moves up and fights Javonta Davis. Well, let's see if so-and-so moves up and fights him. We have to find something to try and bring him back down to level, bring him back down to earth almost.
I think that I always break boxing weights down into three. I think you've got everything above middleweight, from welter down to featherweight, and everything below featherweight. And I think from super bantam to feather is a jump. And if you look at the guys that are at featherweight, there's some monsters in there. And I'm not sure, Inoue can hang with anyone, but I'm not sure if Figueroa, Vargas, Lara, Lopez, I'm not sure they're the right type of fighter for Inoue. Not just yet. I mean, we're asking an awful lot of him, aren't we? But I certainly like the look of a Robzy Ramirez fight, or even as a Dogbo fight for Inoue. But are we sort of, we've done this with Duran. We're not happy till he's up at middleweight fighting a monster like Marvin Hagler. Are we asking too much of Inoue?
Yeah. So you're saying Inoue versus Alim Kanouli, or I ain't tuning in, Des?
I'm looking at the super bantam
Fondora. One. Let's get a bit more Fondora.
Yeah. I think Neary is a really good fight. I think that's a really good fight. I think that could be built. And if he comes through Neary, then the natural move will be to go up to featherweight. And it's, you know, what unlucky sod's going to get him, you know?
Ryan, you wanted to make a point about Brandon Figueroa. He was a super bantamweight. He's now up at featherweight. He's quite a big unit himself, isn't he?
Yep. Yeah, so Brandon Figueroa is obviously, he's shown quite an engine over 12 rounds. You know, whether you could fit him into a head guard, that's a question to for Eddie and his clean boxing program to answer. But I think a guy, so if you take Inoue and to put him up to featherweight, I think he'd ruin a guy like Brandon Figueroa, a guy that walks into range and throws wide hooks. That's just, he will get absolutely demolished by a guy like Inoue. So send him up. I mean, you were saying, I didn't watch the post fight, but you're saying in the chat that Inoue doesn't want to move up, and the only fight left for him at Super Bantam is Akhmadaliev, which is the fight. That's going to be a real good fight. I still think Inoue wins. I think Akhmadaliev is a little bit static, and he throws well in between punches, but he will stand in range. And Inoue has, he didn't show it tonight, but he's shown it in every other fight where he will pop in and out of range, and that'll do for Akhmadaliev. I think he'll knock him out, and he'll knock Brandon Figueroa out as well. I think Figueroa will come in with those wide hooks, and he'd eat a straight right. He get knocked out. I think you've got to put him up, really. And who at super featherweight? Could you imagine an Inoue and Navarrete fight? That's one for the nutters on the Tuesday night.
On a Tuesday night or Tuesday morning, even. Let's see who's in the chat there. Danny Young says, good job, Inoue isn't a sex pest. He'd been in and out of the missus without her even knowing about it. That's a nice thought there. Inoue, pound for pound, number one, says Matt Butters.
They should know about it, man, to be honest with you.
can I just say about Neri?
Yes, Neri, absolutely, yeah.
Yep, Neri is in my fight of the year. Rahidin versus
Hovhannissian.
That's fight of the year for me. It might be a little bit between Oshaki Foster and Rocky Hernandez. Mm-hmm. Like, they're my two fights of the year. So I'll give it to Lewis Neri. He's been a drugs cheat in the past, and he's missed weight, and he's done all that shit. But getting beat by Brandon Figueroa and then putting in a fight like that, that's how you, if you're listening, fucking Dillian White and various other drugs cheats, that's how you rehabilitate your name. You know, that's how you put your name back in there and say, yeah, Lewis Neri, you can have a fucking Inoue fight now.
Sorry, Ryan, do not go giving Neri any props, man. The guy's a fucking scumbag.
Even if it takes a punishment beat.
That was a fight. That was a hell of a fight.
He's a fucking cheat, right? And do you know what, right? I want to see the fucking Inoue fight of him now, because I want death. Like, I want to see that guy laid out, fucking shivering, like, with blood pissing out of his nose, mouth and eyes and everything, man. Give him Neri. Bring it up next. I love it. I love it all day long.
What about Ricardo Espinosa? Go on, Rob.
Do you think he has a ceiling, though? Like, he said in the post fight, he's not wanting to go up, like, you know, putting those extra pounds on all the time, like, and aging as he got. Like, I don't know. Like, do you think he's just going to hang around here and dominate? Like, you haven't got an opponent if he does. Like,
well, that's what I was just going to say, Rob. Never mind moving up in weight. I wouldn't necessarily use the word complacency, but the commentary team said themselves he has to get up for a fight. He wants fighters to come to him to give him something dangerous to think about. Topales wasn't really on his level, but he did give him things to think about, and there was two belts and the chance of an undisputed unification on the line. So that's enough to be getting on with. Whereas, though, I suppose, Danny, I'll throw this one out to you. If you're fighting against the likes of Neri, against Akhmadaliev, dangerous fighters, we saw it against Paul Butler, all of a sudden, not so much complacency, but you know what I'm getting at here. You could start to fight down to that level, even though it is at 122, and he has to have the big fights, the big fighters, to bring the big performances out of him.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I still think that, like you boys just mentioned, I still think there's a few names knocking about in this division. You know, I put in the chat there. I quite like the Casemiro fight, to be honest with you, if that's still available. And I think that's a big enough name to keep it interesting. Yeah, look, if he ends up having, I think that he could still, you know, squeeze three or four fights out of this this weight division. And then if he's looking for more names and titles, then, you know, he's just going to have to go up, isn't he? But, yeah, I don't know. Will we ever get to a point where we have a, if we end up doing some kind of pulling someone down and they'll just have a fight at a catch weight or something? I don't know. Potentially, just to get some names?
Possibly. Well, you mentioned Casemiro there, Danny, and I wonder if he's even on the radar. I think technically speaking, he would be. After he beat Rigondo, which is 2021 now, it's over 2 years ago, the time just absolutely flies. You would have said he has that kind of name value. But since then, I'm looking at his record here, beat a Japanese guy in Korea, beat a fellow out in the Philippines and fought to a technical draw. I think it was a head clash in Japan last time. Casemiro's kind of gone off the radar, hasn't he? They'd have to rehabilitate his name a little bit to make it interesting. Otherwise, people will go, oh, I'm not really that interested in that. I think if they'd have struck after the Rigondo fight, maybe you could say so, because he'd had a couple of fights in America. He'd beaten Tete, hadn't he? He'd had a couple of fights in America. I'm going around the houses here, Danny, to say that he's kind of fallen off the radar a little bit.
I know what you mean, but he's still a name, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He is still a name.
Also, Steve, I think Rob touched on it. They're going to have to try and get a new way into America at some point. And I think if you fight a Casemiro, it still stays as a Far East product. I think they want to get a new way in with Americans or South Americans or Europeans, and then you can pitch that to America or even in the Middle East. At the moment, I think Inoue and his brilliance is still a bit niche, and they want to try and expand it to the world. And I think fighting Casemiro keeps it in-house to a degree.
I think if he fought Casemiro on a US card, it would do wonders for him, because Rigo had spells in that fight, didn't he? And he was 85 when he fought him. So I think fucking Inoue would fucking completely fucking obliterate this guy. And
yeah, he obliterates Casemiro, he does, yeah.
Uh-huh. So it might be a good breakout fight for him in the States to see him completely dismantle Casemiro. Like.
And he's got. Do you agree, Rob? He's got to be in America. I think
we look at things differently. Maybe for him, he's comfortable being in Japan and fighting in Japan and all that. But we look at things differently. Like, it's like, you know, we want the Canelo to start speaking English so he can become a bigger star for the sport. And Inoue hasn't got that Manny. He has the kind of. He's picking up on that kind of Manny fan base, like, but he hasn't got the. You know, he's not going to sing fucking nothing's going to change my love for you in English or nothing after the fight. You know what I mean? To kind of cross over to the wider public. So I'd love to see him fight in America so more people know about him. But maybe the guy's just fucking comfortable in Japan and feels like he doesn't have to move. Like,
He has fought in America. But in response to your thing, Des, I wonder whether they'll even bother with America. Because when Bob signed him, you thought that was going to be the thing. He's going to go over to America now. COVID obviously hit and he had those two fights in the bubble. But ever since then, he's gone back to Japan. Big money, big support, Amazon Prime and all this type of stuff. I wonder whether they'll even bother now. Because Fulton could have been an opportunity. They brought him back over to Japan as well, Des. Do you think that's even something that they're even going to be looking at now? Is Bob even a big player? He called out two or three different promotional entities in his post fight interview.
And maybe I'm just being a little Englander, thinking if it's not in America or Europe, it don't count. I mean, Japan's got a huge population, spread it out to the Far East. I mean, they're really into their fighting sports. But I think that Inoue, just like, and I always keep going back to Roberto Duran, and I just think that they've scratched the surface with this kid, who's a generational talent, who's going to be remembered for a very long time. And I just think they want to maximize that global market. This kid is a product, and I just think it's, and again, this might be a little Englander in me, but I just think it's a shame if he stays in the Far East. But yeah, you're right, they've gone back there and they're happy there, and they're obviously clearing loads of money out there. They're doing very well out there, and it's a huge market. But I just kind of always expect the very best to be in America and Europe.
I think when you look at the likes of Aram, like, he talks in mats, doesn't he? Like, even when he signed Floyd that time after he got the bronze medal, he told him the difference between his bronze and Oscar's gold was he was getting 15 a night and Oscar was getting 50 a night to start. Like, and that always left a sour taste in Floyd's mouth against the sport. He wanted the Oscar money and the Roy money when he was beating Genaro Hernandez. So Aram speaks in mats. I think if it was lucrative enough to bring him across against a big opponent, he'd have already looking to do that. Like,
Yeah, I don't think it's worth it. Des, to be honest, is my inclination off the top of our head. I haven't thought it through, but I'm thinking, have they got the opponents? What they're going to sell him on again? Like, he doesn't speak English. I'm not saying that matters to us, but if you're thinking about moving him over to a different demographic, he doesn't look and sound like people who'd be watching boxing. You know what I mean? I wonder why they would do that.
Yeah. And look, listen. Someone made the Canelo comparison, but Canelo coming from Mexico to America, it's index linked, isn't it? There's so many sliding on America. Yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
Sorry, I just wanted to add there, like, he just needs to come back to the halfway house, which is Glasgow, because when he was there, believe me, the hype was there, man. Like, honestly, there was plenty of people there to see him. So bring him back to
That's
Glasgow,
just the fucking
man.
Half the squad of the Celtic team were half Japanese. That was all there.
Yes, Ryan, absolutely. You can jump in about Inoue. I heard you shouting about Lopez. Was that Luis Alberto Lopez you were referring to as well? Because he might be moving up in weight, they were saying.
Yeah, well, that's a guy on ESPN who's at featherweight. So
yeah,
that's like a logical step for him to take. And he'd knock him out. That Lopez guy, he's a little bit fucking unorthodox, and you'd think Inoue would knock him out, but yeah, in terms of Inoue's global appeal, I'm in New Zealand and he wasn't on, I guess, terrestrial, or I couldn't get him by legal means. So it's a little bit fucking, I think they've just got to try and go the American route with him and get him in with these Mexicans. I think that who's the bloke that Rabisi Ramirez lost to, I think he
Big Espinosa, he's 6'1". Yeah,
he'd smash him to bits. If they get that on like primetime ESPN, like, you've got a star there, because this is a guy who's a two-time guy, and
two-time,
I think, that's your guy, man.
Yeah,
this is the guy of the sport. This is who we should be getting behind. I don't know why it has to be, he's from Japan or whatever. Who gives a fuck?
But you know what people are like. It's like the old demographics, isn't it? The Mexican demographic, the black demographic, someone who looks like me, who I can get behind. You know, a lot of people sitting in San Francisco or Wolverhampton or whatever aren't going to be getting behind the likes of an Inoue if he doesn't speak English. That's the reality of the situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit, and that's a shame, really, because I was saying the fight before Inoue, where it was the two Japanese boys, and it was a Japanese title on the line, two guys, 6-0, 7-0, or whatever. They put the heart on the line, and they showed the sport for what it was, and that's what the English boys should be looking at, and they should be saying, they're the fights that we need to be putting on. They're the fights that are going to attract fans. And that's what the sport is about. And I want to see more of that. And to exclude people because of nationality and skin color, that's all bullshit, man. Let's just see good fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, but we know the way that we want it to be, but the way the world is and the way the boxing market works, and that's the unfortunate reality of the situation, isn't it?
Well, show them what they need to see. Like, Espinosa versus Rabisi Ramirez, that was a great fight. Yeah. We all agree it's a great fight, and it will do great numbers. You know, so let's put it on, man.
If Ramirez had won, do you think that Bob would have looked to have moved Inoue up, encouraged him to go up and fight Ramirez?
I don't know, because Ramirez, he can stink the place out, and he can steal a win.
He has a story, doesn't he? He's a puncher, he's Cuban, etc. Former two-time gold medalist. I think that Bob might have tried to sell that.
I've got the solution. We need to forget about Bob and concentrate on his excellency. Any of the listeners, send him the link. Send him the link to the Pulse Fight Pod. We're talking about the monster. He needs to get on this fucking trade. I wouldn't know. All seriousness, as these heavyweight events kind of unfold in Riyadh, I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see some of the stars of the lower weights pop up on the card, because he obviously has the budget. They don't cost as much maybe as fucking some of the bigger heavyweights to put on. And I could see some of these guys making on some of these kind of bigger cards in Riyadh if this is the way it's going to go. Although the other night, didn't exactly fucking, the last two fights they've had in Saudi haven't exactly fucking stuck to the script. So with Wilder losing, it kind of fucked everything up. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if we're going to see like massive boxing events with fighters from different weight classes, all on the same card out in some of those shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, would not be surprised at all. Right, guys, we're going to go for another 5 minutes or so, and then I'm going to let everybody, I'm going to unleash everybody to go back to their family. Sorry to have to do that to you. Danny Young has dropped off, thanks to him. Ryan's in and out, but hopefully we'll get him back on again shortly. Let's have a look at the chat very quickly. Marty Smith says, been a while, lads. Hope you are all doing all right. Great fight. Inoue dismantles everyone, pound for pound. KC says, hello from Tokyo, Japan. Hello to you as well. James G says, it's
in Japan,
not putting fighters on because they aren't popular. And the Saudis will want Inoue versus Loma, says Nathan N. Rob, it was the story of body shots, really. I thought Inoue's body work, especially that left hand, was really good. They were screaming for Topalis, as I mentioned, to go to the body as well. And they both made adjustments. Topalis, to his credit, did make an adjustment, started leaning back out the way of that right hand. But as he tired, he started leaning in. And then Inoue, in turn, made an adjustment and started looping the right hand underneath. It was a physical battle, but a mental chess battle as well. So shout out to both of them for their thinking, strategic thinking, let's call it.
Well, I remember when Topalis got in the ring after the Fulton fight, and I remember thinking, this fella's looking too happy. He's far too fucking...
Pacquiao vibe, wasn't that?
Yeah. I was like, has he just watched this fight? He seemed very fucking content. So it was no surprise kind of that he made a go of it. But you're talking about adjustments. I actually feel physical sympathy when I'm watching Inoue hit fellas with body shots. It's like, I can nearly feel him. The technique is all so fucking crisp, and the way he delivers them, you're like, fucking hell, man, how is he standing up to that? So, I mean, Topalis had a right go. He did as much as he could do, and he's come out of it like, you know, there's ways to lose, I guess. And, you know, Paul Butler, I think, got rightful criticism for, well, I don't know, like, it's different when you're in there with him, but he didn't go to try and win the fight. Like, he went to try and survive, and Topalis went to have a go. There was belts on the line, and he was bringing his belt. He didn't want to give it up. He was wanting to unify the titles, like, and he fucking did as well as he could, and he operated at probably his highest level, but it was just levels below anyway. And the knockout, it's just the inevitable, isn't it? You can see it in him when he hits the deck. It's like, fuck, I've done everything. Like, there's nothing left for me here. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, it was completely gone from him. So that's what Inoue does to people. Like, he breaks their will as well with his power, his speed, his skill, his smarts. It's just like, it's almost like it's impossible to beat him. I can't see anyone beating him.
Yeah.
You know, that way, I can't see anyone on the landscape beating him, even if you move him up, like, unless you fucking move him up to Tank Davis, which Floyd was talking about the last time, because he's a bastard and he doesn't want anybody else having the spotlight. Like,
and he's one of them as well that you get the feeling that guys after two or three rounds realize that just to survive is success. You know, like, just to hear the final bell is an achievement. And that's a sign of a great fighter.
It reminds me a lot of the time when you see fighters get hit by him. You remember when Golovkin hit Curtis Stevens with the left hook and he dropped him and he made the face when he hit the ground? Like, what the fuck was that? That's what the reaction is a lot of the time. The first time he lands with power, it's like, you can see them like, fuck. So, yeah, it's you can't say enough good about the guy. Like, he's absolutely brilliant.
But one thing I would say, guys, is, If they, historically, whenever you've had great fighters go up two or three weights, they've always been matched away from natural punches. Whether it's Ray Leonard or Tommy Hearns, even though they're brilliant fighters, Roy Jones, brilliant fighter, Mayweather, they always stay away from them awesome punches. The Costa Zoos, or they stay away from the heavy-handed ones that iron people out. And I'm not sure if they're going to match Inoue if he does go up to featherweight. They'll probably stay away from them, the Laras and the Lopezes, just because they're so heavy-handed and they can put your lights out. So I think he will go up, but I think he'll be matched sensibly or carefully.
See, against those guys as well, though, you'd always have him in with a legitimate shot, because they throw punches very wide, and his punches are so straight and so accurate. You feel like he could knock the two of them out as well. Like, don't you? You really do. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah, but part of me thinks, could Roy Jones have beaten Evander Holyfield? But we never found out. He went and fought John Ruiz. They're so shrewd. Like, Ray Leonard fought Donny Lalonde, and Tommy Hearns fought Dennis Andrews. Whenever they go up that extra weight, they always think, where can I pick one that's not going to Maybe. You know what I mean, Nate? They're so short.
Got up 25 pounds, so you give him John Ruiz, like
that's right.
the Lalande one, I remember they dragged him down to 68, and they fought for the light heavyweight title and the super middleweight title at the same time, and Leonard got his fifth title.
And didn't Cotto do the same thing to Daniel Gill, drag him down a little bit too far, and it gives you the advantage, but they're always going to be cute around it, aren't they?
The younger listeners won't remember, but that was 89, I think, the Lalande fight. So I was around 11, maybe. So I was like firmly into boxing or whatever at that stage. Or maybe it was earlier than that. But
88, I think, Rob. 88,
it might have been 88, yeah. So Lalande was the heavyweight or the light heavyweight champion at 75. Leonard dragged him down to 68. But Thomas Hearns had been the first fighter to win world titles at four different weights by knocking out Rodan a year earlier. So Leonard wanted the edge on him, so he got the fucking super middleweight and the light heavyweight title in one night against Lalande, and Price were fucking burning him because he was on top of the ring at the end of it with his hand up with five on his, and they were like, what's such a bastard, it's four.
Yeah, good knowledge, Rob. That's really good knowledge, mate, I've got to say.
MB says Inoue's left hook was a surprise versus a southpaw. Topales held that high guard and he couldn't see the left hands coming in. KC, who's in Japan, he informs us, says Inoue said he's going to stay in the division for a while. He did. He said he's going to grow into 2024 will be the year for a super bantamweight, he said. And he's got a fight lined up for May. They're in negotiations at the moment. We expect it will be Lewis Nery. Washington Holomani says a W for Inoue, which is absolutely correct. He's spot on the money there. Des, what about Topales? I know you only saw limited footage of the fight, but did himself no harm whatsoever. You could see the fight with Akhmadaliev was sort of close enough that they might run that back again. If Akhmadaliev then gets the win over Topales, which many thought he should have got in the first fight, he could become a viable opponent for Inoue as well then. So it kind of works, maybe, that rematch.
Yeah, why not? I mean, like you say, why not, Steve? I agree with that sum up. I think that's perfect.
BlizzKings says Inoue versus Casemiro or Lewis Nery in 2024. We've mentioned both of those fighters as well. Unless anybody has anything they want to throw in, then I think we'll just slide off. Go ahead, Rob.
I know I refer to me that a lot on this pod, but everything about boxing comes from him. But I just remember, we're talking about like me showing me age, but I remember when Hearns knocked out Rodan and he won the fucking, you know, he's the first man to win four titles at four different weight classes. Uh-huh. My dad was putting an asterisk on it because he's from the eight weight class division. So he was like, they're only half weights now. They're only half weights. That's what he used to call fucking divisions in between, like light welter and all half weights. Fuck's sake.
Well, it is becoming more difficult, isn't it, with the unifications, Rob? We used to have the three belts and now it's in the four belt era. So you've got to kind of sweep up them four belts. I was informed the other day that the first four belt unification was actually a bit of a history that Wellington was at. Hopkins against De La Hoya was the first time the four belts were unified.
Oh, were you at that one, yeah?
Yeah, I was at that one, yeah.
Oh, class. Wow.
Brilliant. 2003, yeah.
But even as great as Floyd was, and I'm a massive fan of Floyd, but he navigated away from Costa Zoo and Margarito, didn't he? I think he said it himself, sometimes you've really got to pick and choose who you go up against when you're jumping up two or three weights. It's historically, especially with the American, brilliant American fighters, They do navigate around them big punches.
The Costa Zoo one and Floyd is a big pity it didn't happen. Like, I think he would have beat Costa Zoo, but I would have loved to fucking see it. And the Margarito one, like, I suppose he was vindicated after the load of
Rob, the only thing I can say about Costa Zoo and Floyd, I think his timing's everything, and it would have mattered what version of Costa got what version of Floyd.
Yeah, but you're right.
Zab Judah was as good as Floyd or on the same trajectory as Floyd when Costa got hold of him.
Speed-wise, he was probably as fast as Floyd, if not faster.
It would have been interesting.
He showed that in the first three rounds when he got to Floyd as well.
He worked against
himself that night, didn't he? Like,
first three or four rounds, he caused him problems with his speed. I think as well, Des Costa's he had a lot of problems with the injury, didn't he? Towards the end, he was out for big, long swathes of time.
And we forget, Costa come through the old system where he was the number one in Russia. Like, how good have you got to be? And how many fights do you have to get through that system? So by the time he turns pro, he's had a really good career already, isn't he? Mm-hmm.
Take aim, says Deontay Wilder, ? I don't know if he means Inoue against Wilder, but I suppose why not.
Well, judging on the other night, we wouldn't.
Yeah, he would have a chance, wouldn't he? You would think so.
I just wonder what the fuck, when it comes to Wilder, like what was going on in the corner. So we're giving all Parker all the credit and Andy Lee all the credit for pulling it off, but Why the fuck, when you look at Wilder's best knockouts, it's when he walks to the guy. Mm-hmm. When he walks to him, when he walked to Ortiz, when he walked to Dominic Brazil, hold his feet in the middle of the ring and walk to the guy. What the fuck was stopping him from walking to Joseph Bagley? He was right there. I know he's moving his head, but when he was fighting on the back foot, he gave himself no chance. So
probably fucking Rob, you've got a bit muffled. Oh, there, you're back.
Sorry, he probably could muster one more good performance if he made an adjustment, but I think when the way he was talking afterwards, 1 foot out of the sport. His 2 feet were out of the sport, but
right, well, I don't know where his 2 feet were, but they were barely in front of Parker all night, were they?
maybe it's the ayahuasca or whatever, like, but why he didn't fucking just go walk to him, I don't know. Like.
Yeah. Take aim, says Rob, turn down your DAZN feed or Matty will be on to you. Well, it's just as well DAZN weren't televising anyway, because you wouldn't have heard them punches landing anyway. Yeah.
Like the silent movies, everyone got the money back.
Charlie Chaplin. Yeah. Yeah, well, I said we'd go, but we might as well carry on talking as long as the boys are happy. As in, Dez, I know you were watching the Day of Reckoning over the weekend. Any thoughts, any feelings on Wilder, AJ in particular?
I've got to say, I think there was a Ben Davison bounce with AJ. I think Ben Davison was in the right place at the right time. I think AJ was really confused out in Texas. I think he was a little bit unsure of himself with McCracken towards the end. And I think Ben Davison has just been in the right place at the right time. And I used this analogy a couple of weeks ago, just like a football manager, like Sean Dyche can come into Everton and think, look, there's been a lot of mistakes being made here. Let's go back to basics. I think Ben Davison has gone back to basics with AJ and just got him doing what he's good at. And I will say this, as good as I thought AJ looked, I was amazed at how bad Volin looked.
Why did he look so bad? I thought he looked out of shape for a start.
He was terrible. I don't get it. Maybe he had the sparring partner mentality. Maybe he was spooked because him and AJ have done quite a bit in the past. I don't know. But, that was Volin. Wilder looked awful. I think Andy Lee and Parker got their game plan spot on. I really enjoyed watching the way Parker was educatingly pressing Wilder. And Rob, like Rob said, I don't know if Parker stuck Wilder on the back foot, but Wilder stayed on the back foot all night. And I've been watching Wilder since 2008. He's the fighter that can't fight going backwards. Mm. But they allowed him to do it. It was crazy. I touch on Bivol. And yes. Then I'll hear what you lot want to say. He's the most quintessentially Russian fighter I've ever seen. He's everything Russia produces. They're so pragmatic, so dedicated, so disciplined. He goes out, he does a good first minute. He has a breather in a second minute, doesn't give nothing away. And in the last minute, he nicks the last 30 seconds. He's all about just winning rounds, winning fights. I was disappointed because I had a brilliant accumulator with Bivol to stop Arthur, but he just never put his foot on the pedal, and I thought Arthur was ready to go after round 3 or 4. I don't know how you saw it.
Mm. And then he only went down in the last round, well, the 11th round, I think it was. He touched down Arthur.
And even in round 12, he didn't want to come out of his comfort zone, did he, Bivol? Bivol's just decided that will never come out of a comfort zone.
He's like what Steve was saying earlier, it's like he just does enough to win. He doesn't give just a fuck about it. And he needs opponents, yeah. I think, to bring the most out of him. Like you see the best of him when he's up against a bit of adversity, like an L, or he's trying to make a statement. But if he just has to go through the fucking motions, we've seen it a million times. Debt, taxes, and Bivol by decision. Like yeah, those guys he should have stopped along the way 4 or 5 years ago. He could have stopped Joseph. There's so many like that he could have stopped if he put his foot on the pedal and just didn't bother. Like, so that's disappointing sometimes, but he is brilliant to watch. But I agree with Dez about AJ. I was going to say it. I didn't like Eddie's hands out fucking screaming the house down about this new team and everything's back. And he just did fundamental shit. Like he got on the jab he changed the levels with the right hand to the body and to the head and just kept balling guessing, but just basically just got on the jab. Like it wasn't fucking, like I know he tried a little Lomachenko pivot in the first round, but it wasn't as if he just got him back to it. But like I said the other night on the pod, I think that relationship is probably going to be a good one, like because AJ needs people to blow smoke up his ass and have him believing that he's fucking, you know what I mean, a killer again. And maybe Ben Davison's that guy to do it. Like he certainly seems like he believes he is, because fucking seconds after the fight, he's fucking nominating himself to put the Usyk result right for AJ. So I think he's backing himself for the job. To say the least, I'd say that'll be the last you see of Derek James, man. He's been fucking polishing his trainer of the year trophy from last year for the foreseeable.
I never thought AJ out in Texas with Derrick James surrounded by Charlo and Spence. I didn't think that was a good cultural
fit. You always said that, to be fair. Yeah.
I never thought it was a good cultural fit. I think AJ needs to be down the road. He needs to be amongst his own, like Ben Davison, Barry Smith. Who else in that gym? Who's the kid that just beat Conlon in that upset?
Jordan Gill.
Jordan Gill's in that gym. Lee Wood's in that gym. There's a lot of young pros in that gym. So AJ's going to be the top man in that gym and he'll be comfortable there. It's a real good cultural fit. And I just think Ben Davison is just right place, right time. He's going to do a Sean Dyche. He's going to just resurrect AJ. I don't know how far AJ will go. And we'll find out an awful lot about AJ and Ben Davison's relationship when AJ is three or four rounds down in a fight and someone's putting it on him. But for now, I think it's a really good fit.
That's when you're going to find out he's more like Michael Beale than fucking Sean Dyche.
Class. Nothing for somethings in the chat. He says, hello, lads. MB says, I was left a bit disappointed with the Saudi card, as mad as it sounds. He went on to say, who picked a tricky moving body puncher for Makhmudov on that sort of platform as well, Ames? No better question than to bring you in on that one. In fact, I have a better question for you. They were talking earlier about possible next opponents for AJ. Zhile Zhang's name was mentioned. I think they'll put him in with Parker sooner than Zhang. I know he's 40 years of age. He's getting on a bit, but he's a fast-handed southpaw with nice power as well. I think that might send AJ back into the dark dungeon.
I don't think either of those fights are particularly on AJ's radar there, Parker or Zhile Zhang, especially with how Parker, the first fight went with all the holding and the Italian ref that's not been seen since, I believe, if I remember correctly, anyway, in those top-level fights. That was a real dud of a fight there. Watching that one back, I believe, you know, AJ's kind of set his stall out with what he wants, and that's the belts, whoever's holding the belts. Although Hergovic right now isn't holding the belt, either they may do if the belts fragment, which they seem to be, if the IBF hold up the ruling, or Hergovic will be the next before the belt comes, if something can be applied out. But no, I don't know what really kind of comes for AJ next apart from a belt chase. And he says he seems to be open to a Deontay Wilder fight, even though Wilder lost. I don't know why Wilder lost. I don't know if he'd been to some sort of retreat somewhere and tried some sort of psychedelic drug. He never made mention of it. So I don't know what was the reason as to behind Wilder's non-effort really there. But no, I'm not sure what AJ does, unless it's for some sort of belt contention. Otherwise, on that card, like, pick up on the same sort of points. I thought, and I said it in the chat as well, with Bivol specifically, we talk about high IQs in boxing and boxing IQs. I think Bivol's IQ has to be questioned to a degree. I think he exhibits high IQ, but he has to be questioned as to whether he understands where his what position he gets his opponents in, because he's not capitalizing on a fighter who's not his level, not returning back, doesn't have the punch power to knock him out in one punch. Why isn't he stepping on the gas until the later rounds? Why is he taking that long to do that? And why isn't he getting them out? There's something that I can't come to a conclusion on, really, as to why he doesn't do it. Or maybe he just doesn't want to do it. Maybe it's part of this whole... There was a feeling that he deliberately lowered his level in the Craig Richards fight, which then got him the Canelo fight. Is it that part of the equation there that Bivol's thinking forward in then just the moment that he's in? Otherwise as well, I also thought Jayapatai has got to start being matched up against fighters that are in his ability level as well, because the last two fights have been dangerous matchmaking, not worth, in my opinion, the money laid out to be. Jordan Thompson was battered for those four rounds, and then Elizarro was wiped out with a rope. It could be a lot more dangerous the way he fell and his back of his head hitting that rope, and don't know what the kind of telling effects will be for Elizarro. But yeah, I think Jayapatai needs to stay away from now being fed opponents and actually have some proper competition, whether that be at cruiserweight or heavyweight. And by the way, the IBF were right to strip him, and Eddie Hearn knew going into the fight, with the exception happened with Thompson. So I don't know why there was the crowing and complaining about him being stripped. They knew what the situation was, so that's the decision they made. So they have to live with it. So the IBF title was stripped from Opetaia. So if he wants, he has to go fight for it back, or like I said, move up a division. But yeah, no, look at the heavyweights. I thought AJ looked pretty good. I don't think this is really the return of the destroyer AJ. I think AJ just has found some answers now with Ben Davison and the research, whatever it is they do, the film study. I think that all kind of lends into how AJ's ethos is of preparing for fights and wanting those answers and wanting those questions that he's got answered as well too.
Do you think, I'm sorry to interrupt you, do you think the fact that the preparation and the videos and all that, whether he's actually learning anything from it, the fact that he feels like he's doing it makes him mentally more prepared, if anything?
Yeah, I think that's all it is. It's just direction. I think AJ's a fighter who in camp, you work out the inputs to the controls. If you're looking at this like I'm looking at this like a PlayStation analogy, you got your controller in front of you, you put all the inputs in, and AJ will go perform all those inputs that you put in, as opposed to being a fighter who you give them their own six, you give them the tools, and then you go do it, you know, with some sort of loose kind of game plan going. And every fighter and team will have the game plan, but something more strict and something a little more relaxed is the stricter guide is, I think, what AJ thrives off of. And also, I think as well, you got to lend credit to AJ if this works out, because AJ is doing the inverse or the opposite of what Tyson Fury is doing. Tyson Fury, the accomplished fighter, going into now being the knockout artist or looking for those knockouts. AJ doing the other way around, I think, is a lot harder, being a knockout fighter going into someone who's more of a complete boxer. If he pulls it off, he's got to get a lot of credit, whether it be through Derek James, Ben Davison, but himself specifically as well, is to turn himself that sort of way at this sort of stage in his career, having the grounding from the Olympic side, of course, kind of gives him that platform to be able to do that and rely on and go to that side of him. But in this stage of his career, to go to that side, I think if he pulls it off, claims a title as well, I think he deserves a lot of credit for it.
Ames, just quickly back to Wilder. I think his mentality's gone. This is a guy before he was a stone cold killer, talking about bodies on the record, as distasteful as people felt that was. Now he's talking about going home to his family and making smart investments. I think his complete mentality's changed. But more importantly than that, have you been zoning in on the old photos, Ames, to see if there was any egg weights in Parker's gloves?
I haven't been zoning in, but like, look, don't want to take this down the wrong sort of path, but these psychedelics and things that Deontay Wilder has taken, aren't they supposed to like really kind of remove or dull your ego and make you think of life in a different perspective? And part of the big package with Deontay Wilder was his ego. The fact that he's a bronze bomber, the fact that he can knock you out, the fact that he believed it, the fact that he believed that it was to knock out any opponent. Wilder, I don't know, like he said all the right things in the build-up, but he was a lot more... One of my friends, Donna Corby, who we know well, Donna said when he saw him over the PFL, when him and Ngannou faced off, he said that Wilder was so presidential, the way he would like came up, people would come up to him and bothered him all night, and he didn't say anything. He took the chance to take every photo with every person that came up to him. Not that he's saying that he wasn't doing that beforehand, but the whole kind of perspective change of him not being that bronze bomber, someone who's been more affable as opposed to being someone who's on the front foot and wanting to chase something down, wanting to hold on to his title, wanting to really kind of go for the kill. Does he need to find that again? Probably. Is it still there again? I don't know if those sort of things take that out of him. He said, I saw a Michael Benson tweet, I didn't watch the interview, but I think he's been on one of these channels and said, look, I need to find that again. But if those things take that out of him, then he's not going to find it.
No,
they reckon it's the same chemical that's released from your kidneys when you die, so it's giving you the euphoric feeling of fucking going to heaven. And apparently, after you take it, you have this eternal inner peace. So, if any listeners know where I can get some for the missus, let me know.
Gonna say, you know how Dominic Brazil felt now after he ate him.
I was, don't set me up like that, Steve, for fuck's sake, man. Your heart is to stay on the air.
Sorry.
Just want to say, did anyone see, I don't want to have a belly of the week, obviously, we won't be having it because we won't be back, but McGregor sitting beside fucking Ronaldo ringside, and him being interviewed by Chisora, and he's like, Chisora's like, what did you want to come see, bro? And he's like, I want to see Wilder's crack in the flesh, man. I'm looking at the guy with that frame and wondering where does he get that power. So I want to see the thing. Do you get me? I want to see it. It's like, how is this fella getting to Saudi Arabia off his nut? How is this happening? Fuck me.
Oh dear, some fun and frolics. Yeah, we won't be back till the new year. Before we close out, having a look at Inoue.
Maybe you could ask the doctor, like, what these psychedelics do to.
Doctor hasn't replied to my last couple of messages. To be honest, I think he's had enough of me.
No, that's a real shame.
Yeah, I think the doctor's had enough of me, Rob.
We made him, and now he thinks he's too good for us.
He thinks those biblical tweets are gonna halt serve him on X. He's got another thing coming, man. He's come back to us.
But were we welcoming back?
We were welcoming back.
But those fights with Fury as well, they might have taken a whole load out of him.
I think they did.
That's what happened.
Kevin Barry said to me, look, he had those last two fights were real tough of him, and maybe Fury's taken his soul, as the crude phrasing goes, and it might have been the case that two grueling fights against someone of Fury's stature and the punch power coming back from him, he might not be the same in that sort of sense as well. With the dent in his head from those egg weights, he said apparently that he's got like those injuries from it that might have changed him.
Let's not forget, in the second Fury fight, he came in a lot heavier than he normally weighs. I think he came in 230 or something like that, didn't he? 231,
I think it was,
yeah. So he then had to go lose another fucking stone to make weight for the next fight, and went back down to 212. So, like, he's given up 212 versus nearly 270 Fury was, wasn't he, on the third fight? Like, that's serious punishment he took over those two fights. Definitely fucking took something from him, no doubt about it.
Well, no doubt about it. That's 100% correct. And we've seen it. History proves that sometimes a piece of a fight is left in the ring, particularly on fights like what we saw Wilder and Fury 2 and Wilder and Fury 3. They was epic, and I'd be very surprised if both guys didn't leave a bit of themselves in the ring them nights.
Mm-hmm. Des, just while you're unmuted as well, Ames mentioned about Dimitri Bivol. You said about him sort of clocking out the rounds and breaking it down bit by bit. A bit like Rigondo, not finishing off an opponent. Again, they're from that sort of ex-Soviet kind of communist school of amateurs, which might be a crude comparison. But Bivol, very similar as well, doesn't know when to just get in there and get the job done. He's so regimented in his thinking.
Yeah, exactly that. It's them guys had the same type of coaching. They had a career in the amateurs, and they was very, very successful. And it was all about discipline. It was being very pragmatic. And Rigo's a perfect example of that. There's loads of Cubans. Kindlin was the same. There's loads of Cubans that were incredibly successful. But it really wasn't about coming out of your comfort zone, or a better expression, they're not going to roll the dice. When Bivol, for example, looked at Arthur at, say, round 11, in his head, he thought, right, I'm going to put my foot down now and I'm going to roll the dice. But then the other part said, well, why do that? Go and win the first minute. Don't lose the second minute. Go and nick the last 30 seconds of the last minute. That's Russian. And that's just what he does. And it's a comfort zone thing. It's rolling the dice. It's a lifetime of being taught a certain way. The Cuban program is the exact same as the Soviet program. So that's all it is with Bivol. He's just not got that. He's too logical about it. Do you remember when Vitali Klitschko popped his shoulder against Chris Bird, I think it was, and he sat in his corner and very logically said, no, that's enough for today. I'm gonna get this repaired, and I'll come back and I'll win another day. Yeah. That's very middle class, it's very educated, Eastern European mentality. And it's logical. And us guys, we probably don't view boxing logically, but Bivol certainly does.
But there's the only point I'd come back on you, and that is the dice roll element, because at no point would it have been a dice roll for Dimitri in that fight with Arthur. He's not going to knock him out. He's not going to come back with the very minute chance that Arthur would come back with a punch from the gods. Right, you might count that in, but really, I think it shows a lack of understanding there at that final point from Bivol, in that term of logic, that he didn't go for it because he was beaten all ends up. That's the criticism that I throw towards Bivol, that he really shouldn't.
I totally agree, Ames. I think you're right. I can't get my head around it. In the way you frame that, then you're not rolling the dice. You're going to win this, and even if. But I don't think Bivol ever wants to take himself in an uncomfortable place. And I'm trying to give another example in sport where we see it. I would love to have seen Bivol put his foot down, but it's just not in his makeup, is it? And I hear where you're going with that, about his boxing IQ. Perhaps that's what he does lack. But I've met kids that come out of these Soviet programs and they spent 10 years under a certain regime. They can't help but go back to what they were taught. And I just think Bivol is that guy. But I do take your point, Ames. It wouldn't have been rolling the dice. You would have stopped Arthur, but he wouldn't do it, would he?
It's about time people got the fucking Rigondo memo, though. Like, because, you know, Rigo could have probably stayed undefeated if he'd have stuck to his own path and just fucking stunk the joint out. He was kind of forced into going up weights and losing fights. Like, it's a thin line. So what does he want to do? Does he want to listen to the fucking public who are sick of these fucking decision wins, or does he want to take unnecessary risks? I mean, I had Rigo going up fucking two weight classes like big Japanese guys.
I think the difference is, Rob, the difference is, mate, there's no money in Cuban brilliance, but there's always going to be money in Russian brilliance.
No, fair point. Like, fair point.
So Bivol can stink the ass out, can't he? But he knows he's going to get looked after and paid.
But like, I remember when I used to fucking spar or whatever, I would fucking spar anyone, but I'd be fucking reluctant for a fight to break out. So if I could get someone on the end of the chat, get a breather myself, finish the round, look good, I would have done it every time. So it's hard for me to fucking criticize these guys. I used to be Rigo's biggest fanboy, cheering for him, but he even used to let me down when I was looking at the fight. I'd be like, I go to sleep after six rounds. Would you just fucking knock this guy out? Like, nope. And I think he took a risk early on in his career, didn't he, against Teon Kennedy, and he got dropped. And he was like, ever since then, he was like, fuck that. I'm staying out here. You're not good enough to hit me. You're not going to hit me. Like,
I take Ames's point. It wouldn't have been rolling the dice. I see it the same way. But in Bivol's head, it's just not what he does.
Ames, just on that as well, I don't know whether I was the only person who saw this. I haven't watched the fight back, which I probably should have done, but we mentioned about Arthur having nothing for him and rolling the dice, etc. I do think at the time that Arthur landed something to Bivol's body in one of the rounds
that made him back off.
Did I get that wrong?
No, I don't. I remember seeing that and I was thinking he was just trying to lure Arthur in and out of his shell. Right, that's completely how I read it, because that... I remember seeing that punch. I thought that was like a nothing punch.
Okay.
It was literally just tagging Bivol to the body, and Bivol's never shown a loose or weak body to be affected by something. From how I remember or recollect it, that wasn't a power punch from Arthur in any sort of way. So,
and Arthur never came forward or anything, which indicates what you're saying is absolutely.
He knew. I think you heard like the shouts from the ringside, and Sonny be like, "You hurt him. You hurt him."
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
it just wasn't the case, and Arthur knew it, and Bivol, I think, was just trying to lure him out.
Fair enough. Your point completely stands then. Right, boys, let's finish up on Inoue, Topalez, and then we'll get out of here. Des, final words to you. Masterclass for most parts for Inoue. Topalez really played his part, I thought, this morning.
Topalez was good. Inoue was brilliant. He's a generational great. The closest thing I've seen to Roberto Duran.
There you go. No higher praise. Ryan Deal mentioned in the chat earlier, Rob. Inoue against Alexis Arguello. Could you imagine a fight like that? What an absolute barnstormer that would have been. As for this morning, though, Topalez just couldn't get the job done, but he did his best.
Topalez wouldn't have got the job done if he had the Sandinistas with him. No, a scary guy. I appreciate him while he's here. That's all I say. Like, none of these fighters' careers are short. I can be short, it can go by in a blink of an eye. You know what I mean? The fucking recovering fighters who've kind of had their full careers and retired by the time we're on the pod. So appreciate him while he's here. Hopefully he gets matched in bigger and better fights in next year. He seems to be active and willing to fight. So we're going to see more of him. So just, make the most of it while he's here. Like, if the fucking wider public don't buy into it, we still know how good he is. Like, so.
Yep, appreciate him while he's here. Much like us, hit the like button. We're going for another couple of minutes. Ames, give us your summation on Inoue Topalez, what you witnessed this morning, please.
No, nothing more extra to say, really, if you're honest with you. You've all covered everything and hit the nail on the head. It was Inoue will always be open, but I think that's part of the trade-off that he has in terms of trying to go for the finish. We've talked about other people not going for those finishes. So there'll always be gaps that people will see in Inoue's offense and defense game where they feel like they can exploit, and Topalez did have some joy in that fight, but it was all for the eventual finish that Inoue was looking for. I think he looked comfortable in the fight, really, knowing that he was going to finish his opponent, and I think Topalez really had too much to offer him outside of a couple of spots of joy then. For 30 years old to claim the belts that he's got, and have much more left in the tank. I think he's a quality fighter, as everyone else does. I just want to see him back in on foreign soil, brackets again, you know, and again, really, because take him out of Japan now and really kind of push him if you can, really. Because there are a lot of people in the US and the UK that are into kind of the Japanese culture and the Japanese side of things. I don't know how mm-hmm. really that'll translate into the boxing side of things, but there is some market there if you can fashion it properly. I just wonder if Top Rank will be the ones to do that, or just keep him over there in Japan.
And what about, sorry, Ames, just the moving up or not moving up, what he mentioned afterwards, staying at 122?
Yeah, look. You guys hit that on the head. I don't know really what else is out there for him at this weight, because he's got those belts, and he seems to want to stay at that weight for now. I imagine he will just look to defend those belts. Really, what was the fight that was mentioned in the comments? Brandon Figueroa.
Yes, and Luis Neri as well. Yeah,
good little fight there. Yeah, two great fights. So that's kind of the, I think when you look at Inoue now, it's all a lot of perspective with things. But you look at Inoue and you don't really thirst for any fights, because you know who, or you have that confidence in him because of his greatness that he will come through them. But in offing, they are two good fights. But again, you'd expect Inoue to come through those as well, I feel.
Absolutely. Thank you very much to Ames for closing us out there. I've been Steve Wellings. We've had Danny Young was on the podcast as well. So was Ryan Deal, Ames himself, Rapping Rob Kelly and Dez. Shout out to all the other boys as well who couldn't make it. And hit on the like button if you want to. Subscribe as well. We'll be on Sports Social a little bit later on. Back in the new year, on the night Naoya Inoue got the job done, it was the morning for us. It was more Halloween than Christmas. The Japanese monster creating an absolute nightmare for Marlon Topalez, who more than played his part. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you all again in the new year. 2024, the asylum keeps rumbling. And goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.